Welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass, Some Nerve, Make 2015 the Year You Step Out of Your Comfort Zone. Our guest today is Patty Chang Anker, author of the memoir, Some Nerve, Lessons Learned While Becoming Brave. Oprah.com calls Some Nerve downright inspiring. Patty blogs for Psychology Today's Anxiety section and for her own award-winning Facing 40 Upside Down. Her writing has appeared in many magazines and websites, including Dr. Oz, O Magazine, NPR.org, and TheWallStreetJournal.com. She is also a frequent keynote speaker and workshop leader. You can follow Patty on all platforms, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, or LinkedIn, at Patty Chang Anker. We'll be sharing highlights from today's call on Twitter. You can follow along and join the conversation at Penn Women, at Texas Women, at Mass Women, and in California at WTRMRK, or at hashtag LeadOnCA. Patty Chang Anker, welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
You write that growing up, you were not adventurous by nature. While other kids were out climbing trees and skinning knees, you were inside reading books about people climbing trees and skinning knees. I'm wondering, how did you end up making a career of doing, writing, and talking about things that frighten you?
Oh my gosh, I still can't believe that I've made that journey myself. You're right, I was totally an armchair kid. You know, I loved sitting in a comfortable, warm space, reading about other people having adventures without breaking a sweat myself. I was raised by Chinese immigrant parents, which basically means that I had a Chinese mother who worried about my every move, and anytime I suggested doing something that wasn't sitting quietly and reading a nice book, she would say, "Why would you want to do that?" She would read the Chinese newspaper and sort of like wave it at me, and there was always someone who was going backpacking and then getting mauled by a bear, or someone like stepping up to a microphone and just completely humiliating themselves and losing face for their entire family and being disowned. So basically everything was that you could either get killed or you could embarrass yourself and your family and then wish you were dead. So basically all of the energy in our family was put toward academics, and that also meant that physical activities, just like running around outside and, you know, playing active games and doing well in sports, none of that was emphasized. And so I started to view every time that, like, my heart started beating a little fast that, like, oh my gosh, this is a sign that I'm about to have a heart attack and I need to sit down. So I was also brought up with this massive fear of failure, which in some ways was good. It made me work really hard in school, and it did well for me in the early years of my career. But it also made me highly anxious and just very, very reluctant to take risks. I felt like if I wasn't guaranteed to be good at something, I would often just take a pass. You know, or if I tried something new and it didn't come easily, I'd give up and I would just be like, you know what, I'm not cut out for that. Like, I'm just not cut out for downhill skiing, but I'm very good at Boggle. Like, who wants to play Boggle with me? So now, when you're young, this is okay. I feel like I was able to manage in school and in my 20s pretty well. But as I grew, my comfort zone kept shrinking. I have what I call my Greek chorus of perpetual doubt in my head. And these are all the voices that say, don't do it. You know, you won't be good at it. And people will laugh at you and like, oh my gosh, this won't end well. Right? Like, we'd all have doubts and worries. And for some of us, they're at the forefront. And they'll actually dictate the decisions that you make and how big your life is. And my Greek chorus was extremely powerful to me. And what happened was that in my 30s, I became a mom. And, you know, we worry a lot about our kids anyway. My kids had a number of medical issues, and so I was very, very worried about them. And I had ups and downs, you know, in my career and with my husband and friendships. And it's like life comes and knocks you around a bit, right? And each of those contributed to that Greek chorus of doubt. It was like, oh my gosh, this didn't end well in these situations. I don't want that to happen again, and so therefore I don't want to risk anything So let's just stay where we are. So it got to a point where I felt anxious in so many situations that I was pretty well paralyzed. Like, I was afraid of making the wrong career choice. So I made no career choice. Like, years went by where I wasn't making a move forward. I was afraid of rejection. And so I was scared to introduce myself to people. You know, I would be in a coffee shop and see, you know, groups of friends getting together. And I would be intimidated to go up and say hello. I was afraid of bad things happening to my kids. And so therefore, I decided to take the fun out of everything for everyone. So, like, we would go to the beach, and I would be holding onto them so tightly, like, you know, be careful, you could get hurt. And meanwhile, it's like I'm squeezing the little wrist in my hand so hard I was hurting them. And I realized that, like, my life had become this very predictable routine that I didn't want to venture from, that I wasn't enjoying very much, and yet it didn't make me feel safer. Like, it didn't make me feel happier. Like, I was still up and awake all night worrying. So what was the point of protecting myself all the time? So two things then happened when I was about 39 years old that changed everything. One was that my daughter, who was 8 years old at the time, was scared to jump off the diving board at camp. And her counselor said to me, you know, she's anxious, and we'd like her to work through that and see that she's capable of doing it. You know, can you talk to her? And so, you know, like a good mom, I said all the right things. I said, don't worry, you're going to be fine. There are people there watching you. Nothing bad is going to happen. And don't worry about what other people think. And, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen? I said all of the right things. And then she said to me, well, Mom, do you dive? And I thought, what? Why would I dive? Why would I want to do that? Like, it could be humiliating. It could hurt. I could drown. Like, all of these, you know, voices came flooding in. And I realized that I was asking her to do what I'm not capable of doing myself very well, which is to work through my anxiety and get to the place where you're doing what you need to do anyway. So that was one thing. And I decided that I was going to try to learn how to dive myself so that I could see what it felt like to do what I was asking her to do. And it was actually much easier than I thought it was going to be. I mean, for almost 40 years, I had told myself that I was not athletic and that I would not enjoy something like diving off a diving board and that I would not be able to withstand the humiliation of belly flopping. And it turned out that within two lessons, and so that was 60 minutes total, I was able to dive off a diving board. And I looked at the video and I couldn't believe it was me. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, if I can do this, you know, which is something I never thought I could do, well, then what else can I do that I've always counted myself out of? It completely opened up the world to me in a new way. Now, the second thing that happened is that around the same time, I was at the coffee shop, and this really nice woman, you know, she's also a mom, and I had seen her around town before, but I didn't know her well. I think we'd had one conversation before. She invited me to join her at her table. And so this was really not like me, you know, to go sit with someone that I don't know very well and sort of be in for a conversation. And we hit it off, and she told me that she was going to go to the beach by herself without her kids. And she asked me to come along. And that completely blew my mind. I mean, that was crazy. It's like, what kind of mother leaves laundry in the hamper and her kids in day camp and then takes herself to the beach? Like, this is completely the opposite of what any Chinese mother would do. And my Greek course was, like, going crazy. It was just saying, like, what? What would people think? They, you know, they would think you're totally self-indulgent. And then, like, this fear of rejection, you know, this, like, don't go. Like, what will you talk about with her for hours? And she doesn't know you very well, and she's not going to like you. And so just say no. That's, like, the much easier thing. And then this message, you know, Patty Chang Anchor would never do this. And there was something about that, you know, this idea that I was so predictable, you know, that Patty Chang Anchor is so fixed that it felt like a prison. It felt like I was in a prison of my own making, and I couldn't stand it anymore. And in that moment, I just blurted out, yes. I said, yes, I'll go to the beach with you. So this was something that was completely unlike myself, and I went, and it was fabulous. It was a fabulous time. And so those two experiences led me on this journey of saying yes to new experiences and starting to face my fears. And that's where I started blogging, Facing 40 Upside Down, because previously I always hated the idea of being upside down, you know, like diving off a diving board, like when your legs are up and you're flying and you are no longer in control of the situation. I've always hated that sensation. And I thought, you know, maybe my 40s are going to be about allowing myself to go to that place and seeing what happens.
And what happened when you started blogging at 40?
Well, you know, there's something about this milestone of 40. You know, I think for many people, especially for women, it's the first decade that we're not building up our life according to other people's needs and expectations. For me, I know I spent the first 20 years of my life sort of enmeshed with my parents. And then our 20s, you know, most of us are building up our careers and pleasing our bosses. And in our 30s, often it's like kids enter the picture, and so then we're meeting the needs of our small children. But this turning 40, it's like it's this moment when you realize that, like, this is it. This is the life that you've been working toward all along. And how is it? You know, like, is it what you hoped for, and is it what you want for the next decade and for the rest of your life? And so when people say, oh, my gosh, in midlife, you reassess everything, I did feel this need to assess where things were. And when I started blogging about it, I realized that I was not alone. And so much of the anxiety I had held inside, I had hidden from view, and I thought I was alone in having all of these voices in my head. And once you put it out there into the universe, so many people responded back and connected with me and said that they felt the same way, that they were also casting about to broaden their horizons. And then all of a sudden, you don't start feeling this, like, desperate feeling that you're fossilizing or that your life is shrinking and shrinking, but that you can reach out to other people and expand together, you know, expand with each other. And that was extremely exciting. And I think that, like, these aha moments should happen throughout your life, you know. And now I feel like I hope I'm going to be facing 50 and 60 and 70 and 80 and 90, all of it upside down going forward.
That's wonderful. Now, you talked about the fear of failure and just a whole litany of fears. In these conversations that you've had with people once you started confessing your own fears, what are the most common fears that women have?
Okay, so I speak to many women's groups, and I always ask people to either write a fear right on their name tag or to sign my guest book and list a fear. And I would say that the most common fears I see are failure, saying no, and letting other people down. And then there are some fears that are geographical to women. Like in New York City, for example, the fear of driving is very common among women because in New York, often we don't need cars to get around day to day. And then for women who have partners, often when they do need to drive, they'll just let their partner drive. So it just becomes a habit to let other people do it. Then there are fears that cut across gender, you know, so fear of heights, fear of public speaking and swimming. These are things that are common to both men and women. But men are often challenged by society earlier and more often to step up. You know, like boys and men will often challenge each other. They'll push each other. Whereas women often can get away with just saying, you know, that's just not me. And girlfriends often will support each other by saying, you know, you're fine the way you are. And we tend to not want to push each other into an uncomfortable position. What I do think is so wonderful about women, though, is that when we see each other's fears on a name tag, it starts conversations. And, like, people begin to start talking in a very real way about things that matter, you know, like about how they were raised and, like, what they want how they want their kids to be raised and what their hopes for the future are. And it's very liberating, I think, to not have to hold those insecurities inside. And so that's why I think the conferences for women are so powerful, like to be able to get women together and address what our real concerns are and then to share our resources and our ideas and our support. It takes us out of our own homes, you know, like behind our own screens and like our own like tentative dreams. And it lets us know that it's like we don't have to be alone in this. And then it becomes so much easier to be brave.
How did you go about writing Some Nerve and finding people willing to talk publicly about their fears?
Okay, so I started writing Some Nerve because I needed some nerve. You know, I say like we write what we need to read. And for me, I was looking at books about overcoming anxiety, and so many of them made me feel more anxious. They were either by or about very brave people who I just couldn't relate to, you know, people who were war heroes or like people swimming with sharks. And I just felt like I'm just not like that. How can I ever be like that? Or they were very medical and very serious, like, you know, there's something wrong with you and we need to fix it. And like, who wants to step up for that, right? Or they just didn't seem feasible for me. You know, it's like I wasn't going to be able to go on an extended adventure. You know, like I had responsibilities. It wasn't in my budget, like that kind of thing. So I started wishing that there was a book about ordinary people who wanted to conquer everyday fears and live a bigger life right where they live. I was like, I need to be able to do this within the confines of Westchester County. So I just started talking to everyone I met. And this was a great way to get over social anxiety, was to just tell everyone, you know what, I'm researching a book about facing fear. And would you talk to me about like what you're afraid of? And many people ran away, and so that helped me get rid of my fear of rejection, right? Like, there were a lot of people who did not want to talk about their fears at all, but then many people were primed for it, and once they started talking about, like, their scariest experiences, the times that they overcame something, and then the things that were holding them back right now that they wish they could do something about, those were some of the best, like, bonding conversations we could have. And then once you start talking about it, it's almost like you can't help but want to do something about it. So I put together a group of people who are afraid of heights, and we went to a ropes course. And I found someone who was a car crash survivor, and she was afraid of driving. And I brought her to a driving lesson where the teacher was a car crash survivor but had gotten over her fear and was now teaching driving. So all of these, like, sparks happen between people, and it's just, like, inherent drama and emotion. And so researching and writing Some Nerve was, like, some of the most fun I've ever had.
Well, now you went on, you interviewed dozens of experts, teachers, coaches, therapists, clergy members, to find out how they work with people who are afraid. What did you learn from them, and what can we learn from them?
So I learned so many lessons from experts, and people were very generous with sharing their wisdom and their expertise with me, and there are many lessons presented throughout the book. But I'll list four points here that that stood out and that you can implement right away. The first one is that every expert says that you need to do the thing you fear and do not wait for the fear to go away first. There's this classic book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, and that's it in a nutshell. It's by Susan Jeffers. So I was very disappointed to hear this. Like, I was secretly hoping to find someone who would say, like, oh, heavens, no, you know, that's clearly not for you. You don't have to face your fear. Or to say, like, wait, you know, get more credentials, do more research, like, maybe you'll be ready in 10 years. And honestly, it's like, okay, if you want to be a brain surgeon, then yes, take 10 years. You should definitely do your research and practice. But for most people, especially someone like me who, like, wants to get it right all the time, research becomes this form of procrastination. So it's like, if you're waiting to feel ready and to feel brave and not fearful anymore before you jump off the diving board, like, you're never going to jump off. So sometimes you just need to do it. And I was also hoping that I would find an expert who would say, like, listen to your gut. You know, if your gut tells you that you need to stay put and that you're not ready, then you need to honor that, right? Like, stay put. And that did not happen. Everyone says, get up and do it anyway. And I've since realized that my gut sounds an awful lot like my Chinese mother. She wants to protect me, like, which is fine, but I want a full and a meaningful life, and that isn't going to happen sitting in my comfort zone. So if I want a full and meaningful life, I have to get up and go get it. So number two is that you don't have to do it alone. Whatever your fear is, there is someone who can help. If you just look at your local Y, it's like there are so many classes in different areas and topics. And so anything that you've been a little intrigued by, like go take a belly dancing class. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? You could join a Toastmasters chapter for public speaking, or you could sign up in lessons for, you know, driving or swimming. So much of our fear is from lack of experience or from past bad experience, like we tried it, it didn't go well. So the important thing is to find a good teacher who's used to working with adults who may be overcoming some anxiety and fear in order to be there, who can teach you or reteach you, you know, skills that you can build on. Coaches, I also want to say, like, professional and personal coaches are great because they show you how to learn from your mistakes and to not be afraid to try. It's like you look at an Olympic athlete, and they have coaches. They have coaches to look over the tape and to find out where they could be more efficient, you know, the mistakes that they made, and then they send them back out again. Coaches can also, like, question your own perception of what you're capable of. It's like they can see you from the outside in a way that you can't see yourself. One professional coach named Tony Smith told me that the story that I was telling, he was like, you know what, you keep saying that you're this child of Chinese immigrants, and that is holding you back. And I thought, what? You know, that's just who I am. I'm just telling the truth. I'm the child of Chinese immigrants, and that means I'm afraid of failure, you know, yada, yada. And the real truth, though, is that I'm an American adult, and I can change and grow and be whoever the heck I want. And so maybe that's the story I should be telling everybody. So sometimes it helps to have someone else question the things that you take for granted. Therapists are great because they can help you explore why you're afraid in the first place. So, like, there are some people who say it doesn't matter why you're afraid, you just need to learn how to do it and do it over and over again, and, like, there's a value to that. But for people, especially if they've had trauma, doing something over and over again, still holding on to the trauma, can just re-traumatize them, right? And so a therapist can really help you work on why you're afraid and help keep you from making the same kind of fear-based decisions over and over again. So now, if the second point was that you don't have to do it alone, the third point is that you can also do a lot of this on your own. So it's like ways that you can work with the fears yourself. I have a few points that I tell myself all the time. One is to stop catastrophizing. Like, I'm a very creative person, so, like, I can spin all sorts of nightmare scenarios, like, beginning with me stepping off the curb and ending with me, like, dying alone in a hospital bed. So the important thing is to be able to challenge your fears and your thoughts logically and sort of ask yourself, you know, does this actually make sense in the here and now? It's like, I may be afraid to volunteer to lead this project because if it goes badly, I'll be fired. But is that actually realistic? What are the chances of your success? What are the chances, if you fail, of people understanding and learning from that experience? So that's working with the brain on the way it thinks.
Okay. Now, so did we get through all four things?
Let me see. Hold on 1 second. Oh, and I just wanted to say that with clergy, you know, I had them address the fear of death, and I spoke with a priest, a rabbi, and a swami, and it cuts across religions, this idea that we can't worry about death. Because we don't honestly, like, first of all, that death is going to come anyway, like, whether we worry about it or not. And so what we need to focus on is life. And I think that's the most life-affirming thing to hear, is that we are allowed to make the most out of our lives.
Wonderful. Now, you talk about comfort zones, and the fact is comfort zones are so comfortable. And certainly some fears are there to protect us. How can you tell when it's going to be worth putting yourself out there and pushing through the fear?
You know, that's a trick. You can't know ahead of time often whether it's going to be worth it. Like, that's why it's a risk. And the truth is that things could end badly. You know, that's always a possibility. But it's like having faith in yourself that you can tolerate the outcome and that the payoff so much of the time is worth the risk. You know, if you can think about what's motivating you, the values that you live by, and the legacy that you want to leave behind, the example that you want to set, like all of these higher intentions that we have for ourselves, that is worth some discomfort. That is worth some pain. That is worth some bumps in the road, right? And so, like, holding ourselves to that standard that we're stronger than we think. Now, some fears are genuinely self-protecting. So it's like if your doctor says you have brittle bones, don't downhill ski, then don't downhill ski. We should always stay away from lightning, blood, and snakes, in my opinion. but then push against your comfort zone in a different way, you know, like go do karaoke with your friends. Like always be willing to shake things up at your level.
Okay. What happens when you start doing and writing and talking about the things that frighten you? Do the fears disappear? Are you able to quiet the Greek chorus of perpetual doubt?
You know, it's funny. In the beginning, every time I set out to do something I wasn't sure that I could do, it felt like this big dramatic moment. It's like you could hear the music from Jaws playing in the background. But the more you do it, the more familiar the feeling is, and I would just tell myself, wow, look at me. I'm about to do something completely different now. And isn't that exciting? So it's like all that feeling of like the dry mouth and the cold sweats and, you know, the fluttery stomach, it goes from dread to becoming excitement. And so now, like, instead of thinking of fear as a sign that I should stop doing what I'm doing, now I see it as an invitation to start.
Okay. Now, Patty, you started something called the Some Nerve Challenge. It's a hashtag Some Nerve. And I'm wondering if you could tell us what that is, how people can participate, what they'll learn, what they'll overcome.
Absolutely. So the Some Nerve Challenge, you can think of this as like making an actual plan for your bucket list. So what I ask people to do is write down, I will face my fear of blank. So you can say your fear of public speaking or your fear of swimming, and then by blank, by what means. So you would face your fear of public speaking by volunteering to give a toast, or you would face your fear of swimming by signing up for lessons. And so what this does is it takes us out of our primitive fear brain. Like we have this fear brain that locks in from the beginning saying, I can't do it. And it takes us to our rational brain, which says, actually, maybe I could do it, and this is how I could start. I think that having a plan in place and holding yourself accountable is so important. And then you can post it. You can post it online. You can tag me. And then find people to encourage you and to hold you accountable. And then when you've done it, post a picture and, like, talk about it, write about it. This is like a peak experience for you where your life changed for the better. And it just use that as a stepping stone to the next challenge and the next.
What are some of the great examples you've seen on the challenge?
Oh, my gosh. I have seen people with a fear of heights crossing tight ropes. I have seen, it's like trapeze and skiing. And one woman who is 56 years old got certified to become a Red Cross lifeguard, which is amazing because it will impact so many other people along the way. I've seen very practical challenges, like businesswomen saying that I'll get over my fear of having difficult conversations by having them first in the day. Like, that's a great plan. I've seen people who say that they have a fear of financial problems and that they're going to face that by actually hiring an accountant and facing them.
Patty, last question. What is the biggest fear that you've been able to rid yourself of, and what's one fear that you just haven't been able to shake?
Those are good questions. So I would say one fear I've had for a long time is this fear of not finishing. You know, and because of that, like because I don't want to fail and I don't want to give up and be perceived as a giver-upper, I just won't even start. Like I just won't even step up. And the anticipation of that something that the going might get tough would be enough to make me not do it. But when you're facing fear, like when you're committed to facing the fear, part of that is just learning to hang in there. You know, it's learning to not let go and not give up. And I learned to ride a bike well enough to do the five-borough bike tour, which is 42 miles. I learned to surf. I wrote a whole book. You know, so now I've proven to myself that I have it in me to keep going, even with things that I don't feel naturally inclined to, even when the going gets tough, I can reach my goal. And then did you ask me if there's a fear that I have not been able to
share? Yeah, what still plagues you?
Oh, I think that I will forever be afraid of clowns, but, I mean, please, shouldn't we all be?
Okay. That's all we have time for today. Thank you, Patty Chang, anchor. For those of you in California, we'll look forward to seeing you at the Lead On Conference on February 24th in Silicon Valley. For more information, go to www.leadonca.org. Thank you for joining us today.